Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Third hour, Darren Donica Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Friday afternoon. Chase, I know tonight at 6 o'clock is a big moment for you. We've been doing a lot of Zoom calls these days and a lot of Zoom interviews. And your Facebook Live / Zoom interview tonight will be at 6 o'clock.
Yes, with a guy that our next guest, Paul Byrd, knows quite well, but I'm excited. Tom Glavine going to join me on the Facebook Live, and I'd be lying. You know,
Are you going to go fanboy?
No, I'm not going to go fanboy. Ryan was joking with me today that I'd probably have my Braves jersey and hat on, and, you know, I'm not going to lie. I might have had a Braves hat on earlier, but it is exciting because I grew up watching Tom Glavine and those teams, and I remember when Paul Byrd was with the Braves too, and it's fun for me. So this is one of the cool perks of the job, and I'm excited about it. Going to get him to tell some stories. And by the way, today is John Smoltz's birthday. So how fitting.
Well, there you go. Well, since I'm the one who gets to start this interview, I'm going to introduce our guest the way that I want to. He's a Braves analyst for Fox Sports South. He's former Cleveland Indians pitcher Paul Byrd. He is on the line with us. Paul, how you doing?
What's up, guys? If I understood that introduction correctly, are you saying that Tom Glavine is a bigger guest than me?
No.
Chase, your answer.
Okay,
no.
Good.
We're not saying
that. Appreciate that. I mean, I understand he played for the Braves longer, Hall of Fame and all that stuff, but I just, you know, my ego needed a little boost. So thanks for saying that, guys. I appreciate that.
What's a Hall of Fame amongst friends, Paul?
I love it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kind of... You know, it's funny because Glavine was my teammate, obviously, 97, 98. But I grew up, you know, in high school and college watching Glavine pitch. So it was kind of cool. You know, everybody watched the Cubs and the Braves in the 80s. And so, you know, great guy and now a teammate on the broadcast team. And as you said, Smoltz's birthday, everybody's watching the 95 NLCS stuff and World Series on our network, and it's been a lot of fun hearing the announcers, remembering a lot of those great plays and in the NLCS and the World Series, and it's been a time where old-time Braves baseball has been rekindled a little bit.
All now, three of us are baseball fans on this show, Paul, and you actually pitched
for all three of our teams. Yep. We got Indians,
nice.
Mets, and Braves.
There we go. Partial to all three, drafted by the Indians. Went for a circle, came back, pitched in the playoffs for the Indians, and then got to the big leagues with the Mets and, you know, spent some good time with the Braves.
And I'm pretty sure your time at LSU, you had to have struck out Willie a couple of times at Vanderbilt back in the day. Willie, did Paul Byrd smoke you when you were at Vanderbilt?
Well, lucky for me, I was not in the lineup. We did face Paul twice.
Yeah,
but those were my first couple years where I was pitching. No, I was going to say we did win one game. In fact, I got the win out of the bullpen, Paul. I don't know how well you remember. You guys won the national championship, so it was all good. For you guys, it's one of the most fun weekends I ever had as a baseball player because, as you know, it's a special place to play. I mean, every seat was full. It was a big deal every game. The 3-game series down there. We were happy to get one game. And you guys had three big league starters go on Friday and Saturday. Sunday,
I
should say.
I appreciate that. You know, I really, our coach, Skip Bertman, was a legend, you know, and it wasn't just that he was a master on the field, but off the field as well. He was really good at getting a community to rally around college athletics. And Vanderbilt at the time hadn't reached that point. So I remember playing behind the football stadium. You know, foul balls would ricochet off the stadium, and you were just kind of wasn't a big deal. Now Vandy's like number one, you know, and it's really cool watching the transformation of other SEC parks follow along with what LSU and Mississippi State was originally. And I just love college sports. I love baseball in general. So it's nice to see everybody, you know, following suit. But, no, I never got those guys out from Vandy. They were too smart for me. They figured me out by the second or third inning and ran me out of the game. So, you know.
It is interesting, Paul, where Vanderbilt program – in fact, we had Tim Corbin on the show yesterday with the powerhouse that he has built at Vanderbilt. Yeah. And, you know, obviously compared to – it was nowhere near at that level when Willie was there in the early 90s. And then, you know, you're a guy that grew up, I believe, in Louisville. You went to St. X, right? St. Xavier?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I grew up
– homework,
well, I grew up in Lexington, so I'm familiar with the state. And – you know, you think about where – and you went to LSU, which was a powerhouse program.
Yeah.
Still are,
yeah.
but definitely back then, for sure, that was the place to be. But now you look at this Louisville baseball program, and it's been just like Vanderbilt. It's also been a powerhouse.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, having a good coach, having somebody that's their passion, you know, you get the right players in. The next thing you know, the community rallies around a team because – you know, pro baseball is great. I love pro baseball. But in college athletics, you can get a little closer to the players. You know, you can start to, what's the right word, just, I guess, connect with them a little bit more, seeing them go through the struggle. And then, you know, they're gone after a couple of years. And so you start to rally around that university. Same things happen with Louisville. That used to be that field they used to play. And instead of Vandy, where the football stadium was, they played where underneath an overpass. So when you hit a foul ball, you know, it's ricocheting off an expressway. And now they have a new stadium, you know, tremendous coaches now. And, you know, Dan McDonald's one of my favorite. I've gone back and spoken to those teams. And he's done a great job. So it just shows that you don't have to play in the South. Like when I grew up in Kentucky, my dad says, son, we're whiskey, basketball, and horse racing. If you want to play baseball, you're going to have to go somewhere else. Those days are over, you know, Kentucky and
Louisville,
and other programs.
Yeah.
They've got good stadiums and good fans that have rallied around the game. And again, I love college athletics, as you can tell. So it's been neat to see that transformation happen over the years.
Yeah. Well said. You know, we're all wondering, you know, NBA, Major League Baseball starting their season, the NHL, you know, what's next as NASCAR gets cranked up for the first time this weekend. Other things are starting to come back, but I guess my biggest concern, Paul, is if more players have the same feelings as Blake Snell of the Rays, I don't know how they're going to come back because I don't think they're going to get full pay for half of a season. What did you make of his remarks?
I understood his remarks. I thought his delivery seemed off to me, a little calloused. And, you know, we are baseball players. We're competitors. Some of us are mean, and that gets it done on the field. We're not great PR speakers at times, and so it can come across a little arrogant or a little callous. I would say that to him if I was sitting right next to him. I do understand the content of what he was saying, being concerned about safety. I have talked to other players, and we are in an era of a virus that we just don't know. You know, we really don't. And so, you know, I'm not saying players should get full pay. I think both the ownership and the players should do whatever it takes to get out on the field because I think baseball is super important for America. But I do understand his concerns about safety. And, you know, if you get a virus and, you know, you lose, and again, this comes back into we don't know what's going to happen. But if you get the virus and you recover, are your lungs damaged permanently, 10, 20%, 0%? There's things that we don't know. So players have talked about safety. There's going to be a, whenever it happens, a rush. You know, they're talking about mid-June and playing in July, not with fans. And if that happens, you know, there's going to be a rush to get ready in spring training. So, you know, there's some things that certainly need to be considered and, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but I think baseball is important for America, and I would like to see both sides negotiate with that in mind.
Talking to Paul Byrd, former pitcher, and now with Fox Sports South as he covers the Atlanta Braves, one of his former teams. And Paul, I want to ask you about, in light of our college baseball conversation, the fact that the draft is going to be five rounds. I'm looking, you were a fourth-round pick. I'm sure tons of your teammates for LSU were drafted in various rounds. And now, I mean, I was drafted in the 25th round. So I think about what's in store. First, let's take this part of it. How do you think it will affect college baseball, first and foremost?
Well, you know, I'm guessing here, but, you know, college baseball, I love how guys are getting an extra year of eligibility. I think it's not going to hurt the pitchers as much as it will the hitters. I can just tell you, and I don't mean to scare anybody, but hitting is the hardest thing to do in all sports. And I think it will affect some players in that when you take a year off from seeing live pitching, you go backwards. And the pitchers don't go backwards, but the hitters do. So I think the hitters are going to need to really, really, you know, hopefully, you know, everything's ready to go by the fall. I don't want to make assumptions, but, you know, we'll really have to work hard in the fall to get back on track. As far as the draft goes, something that's really unusual about baseball is in the NFL or, you know, basketball and the NBA, when you draft a guy in the first round, he's a pick. You know, in the second round, he may or may not be. And then when you get to the fifth or sixth round, there's those Cinderella stories like Joe Montana and others. But the bottom line is, in baseball, Albert Pujols went in the 12th. Mike Piazza went in the 64th or whatever. There's those stories all over the board. Baseball is so hard to predict an athlete's future. So they can sign somebody else as a free agent if they don't draft them in the top five rounds. But baseball, more so than others, you know, you're going to have a lot of players who I just fear will get overlooked. And that made me sad. I don't have the answer to that one. I would like to see, you know, the draft go deeper, longer than five rounds. But unfortunately, it is what it is, and there's going to be some free agent signings. CJ Nitkowski had a great tweet. If you guys don't know him, he's a broadcaster for the Rangers. He used to play for the Braves. He analyzed the draft, and he had an example of, you know, of the college players, 40% came after the fifth round that were in the big leagues. That's a huge number. And so I think there's going to be people that are left out, and that's a little sad for me.
Another aspect that they're talking about pretty seriously here, Paul, and I wonder what this will look like, is if they chop off some of the lower levels of the minor leagues. Now, I think you move through pretty quick, but I would have to think that there's a lot of people that benefited greatly from being able to almost fail for a while in the first couple levels before they really got to the point. So I kind of shudder to think, you know, from all kinds of different angles, what it would be like without, you know, however many teams they're thinking about lopping off here, because I don't like the idea at all.
I don't either. And, you know, like college baseball, the minor league baseball is fantastic. You can get closer to the players. You see guys struggle. You see guys figure it out. You watch them and follow them to the big leagues. And, you know, when I send something out on Twitter or we talk, there's always fans that get back to me and they go, you know, I saw him in A-ball, Jermaine Dye, happen the other day, and he hit a ball 500 feet, and I was there with my grandpa. And, you know, it's like there's things like that that happen, that minor league baseball is just a wonderful place to go see future big league players and have experiences and moments socially with family members and friends and others that you can't get at the big league level. And that happens in nowhere, Montana, or, you know, where you can't really get to a big league field all the time. So I'm upset that they're taking some of those major league teams away. And, guys, my son plays for the Cubs. He's in the minor leagues with the Cubs, played for Eugene last year. You know, and
Pioneer League? Is that the Pioneer League, Paul?
I believe so. It's up in Oregon, yeah. And so they even go up into Canada. And, man, when I went to that stadium, I mean, it was awesome. There's mountains in the background. The whole team rallies around the Eugene Emeralds. And, you know, the on-the-field antics they had between innings were incredible. You know, all the kids are running across left field to right field, chasing the mascot. And the next thing you know, a guy comes out on a four-wheeler and that's minor league ball, and there's something beautiful about that, and I hate that that has been being dwindled away. So I agree with you. It's unfortunate, and we'll see.
Yeah, and I think the other point that that you tossed in there that I think is very important is it's so meaningful for those small towns to have that team in the summer, right? And and if that's gone, that makes a big mark on that town. That's a big time bummer.
No, I agree 100%. You know, not just jobs, but you know what certain towns are known for. And David Bodie, who's with the Cubs now and signed a multi-year deal for a lot of money last year, he repeated low A twice. You know, so baseball is a game where sometimes you just figure it out later. It's not easy to pitch. It's not easy to hit. And sometimes somebody figures something out. The guy that you're going to talk to, Tom Glavine, later today, who's my teammate, a big fan of, when he got to the big leagues, he struggled. And then he was on the bucket in the outfield during batting practice, and a ball's hit out there, and he's shagging just like all the pitchers do. And he reaches down to pick up a ball out of the grass, and he was a little off, and he picked it up with his N3 fingers, and he threw it in to the bucket like that instead of getting a fastball grip. And he said, man, that felt pretty good. I wonder if I can throw my changeup that way. And the next thing you know, he's got one of the best changeups in the game after working with Leo. And that changed his whole career. So you never know when somebody is going to figure something out in baseball, whether it's a mechanical adjustment with their swing, you know, or something pitching-wise, and be a superstar. So I don't like the fact that they are taking away time from players and great places to play in the United States. It's a travesty to me.
Paul Byrd is with us, analyst for Fox Sports South and the Atlanta Braves, and former Brave, former Indian, former Met, is he's got this show covered. But I do want to ask you, as you mentioned, Fox Sports has been showing, you know, the 95 World Series. I watched the 99 NLCS last night, and just some of these games with, you know, those teams of the 90s. What it was like for you when you joined in 1997? I mean, you're right there in the middle of all this, this tremendous run, and we saw some roster turnover, but then you had the big three and Chipper and others that were part of that. So what was it like for you when you arrived in Atlanta to join such a talented group?
You know, I was blessed to have played with such a great team and arguably one of the greatest rotations, if not the greatest rotation ever assembled. If you look at just numbers and Hall of Fame credentials and things like that. But when I got there to Atlanta, you know, from the Mets, there was this huge mystique, you know, about the Braves and, you know, this aura around them, if you will. And it was crazy because, you know, we had an entourage that followed us everywhere. You'd get in at 2 a.m. to a hotel, and there would be a ton of fans, you know, waiting for autographs. Maddox, for whatever reason, could get off the bus and walk right through the crowd. Chipper and Smoltz, no way. You know, they got mobbed. And it was just kind of fun to meet those guys and see the way they went about their business. They were all different. I learned a lot from all of them, and they all had unique personalities. I loved how they competed against each other, but they also helped each other. You know, I'm talking about the staff. It was kind of like The Last Dance, you know, watching Michael Jordan on Netflix, how competitive he was. They were the same way. You know, they would compete and play golf and compete and play cards and compete on the mound, but they would always help each other when it came time to figure out how to get a hitter out or do what was best for the team, and I admire that. And, you know, Smoltz was a clown. I will never forget when I got to West Palm Beach, and I'm like, man, that's John Smoltz. He just won the Cy Young. What a stud, you know, postseason hero. And we're running, you know, sprints in the outfield poles, so you run from the right field foul pole to the left field foul pole in the warning track. And there's, you know, it had rained, so there's these puddles on the ground, and he's trying to step on every puddle and splash everybody, and he's like a little kid. And I thought, man, this is the big, tough guy I've been watching in the playoffs. This guy's an absolute clown. So it was fun to get to know some of those guys on that level.
Paul, one of the things about those guys is you could take their stats, and they would look great in any era. But the era that you pitched in and they pitched in largely was a tough era for pitchers, right? We know why in retrospect, you know, the steroids and all that stuff. But give me your perspective on pitching in that era where, I mean, it was hard. If you put up an ERA under four, you were doing a heck of a job there. And you weren't a guy that, you know, had the 98, 99 mile an hour fastball. So what was that like just to learn how to pitch and survive for as long as you did during that time?
Yeah, I think, you know, and we're getting back to that now with the changing of the baseball, you know, where the balls just, they go further, whether or not you were enhanced, you know, biologically, or whether or not the baseball is enhanced, the pitcher has the same problem keeping the ball in the park. And so you have to be creative. You have to hit your spots. You have to have movement. And, you know, it wasn't easy. But, you know, when I got a chance to work with guys like Maddox and Leo Mazzoni was the first pitching coach that ever, ever, ever told me, do not try to throw the ball as hard as you can. Velocity does not get people out. You know, location gets people out. Movement gets people out. Throwing the right pitch gets people out. Having quality pitches and assortment of those pitches gets people out. Then I learned. And I do still think that those qualities, I do still know that those qualities get hitters out in any generation. The problem is if you don't do those things and you make a lot of mistakes, you're going to get hurt and going to get hurt quickly. And that's the thing back then and now. If you didn't do those things, the game could get out of hand really quickly. And, you know, after they cleaned up the game and they did start doing PED testing and they required doctor's notes and they said, you know, you can no longer take those kinds of performance-enhancing drugs, there was a little bit of fall off in offense until they changed the baseballs. And like I said, now you have those kinds of things again, where you just simply have to pitch and lower your amount of mistakes.
Do you feel like with this Braves team and whenever the season starts, and I'm going to say when, not if, but when the season starts, but do you feel like that the building that has been done over the last few years is finally to the point of paying off? We saw the playoffs last year and the talented team that they have, but that this team could actually be one that makes a run for it with what they've built both offensively and with pitching?
Yeah, they're going to – this is, you know, I would be shocked if they don't make a 10- to 15-year run over and over again. I say that for a number of reasons. You have guys like Acuna, Albies, who are locked up for, you know, 6-7 years. Who are some of the best young players in the game, along with Soto and a couple others, a Bellinger. You have some guys like that who are just impact players. And I hate comparing, you know, hey, he's Andrew Jones or he's Roberto Clemente or whatever. I've never seen a talent like Ronald Acuna that's had all of those tools together. So not only are they great players, but they're really fun and exciting to watch, and they're that good. I do think that pitching wins long-term. That's what I have seen, and regardless of PEDs or changing the baseballs or anything like that, good pitching wins. And they have guys like that, like Freed, who are young, who've got a lot of miles left on the arm. Soroka is a Maddox-esque type pitcher. I've never seen anybody that's polished as well as he is at that young an age. He pitches like he's in his prime when he's 31 years old, and yet he's in his early 20s and has just been fantastic. So they certainly have the right ingredients. I haven't even mentioned the fact that they have veterans like Freddie Freeman, who are great leaders, teach people how to act, how to go about their business. So they have the right type of people. And with what they did at the Battery, the revenue that they're going to have to spend and go acquire a free agent or continue to pay some of their really good young players, who you have to do after a couple of years, is in place as well. So I think they're set up to be a long-term team that's always going to contend. And guys, I'm in the business of entertainment, you know it, and the fact that they are fun to watch, are passionate about baseball, they harass each other in the dugout, they give good interviews, just makes my job way, way better. And I think that's an important part of the game too.
No doubt about it. And there's a lot of people here in Nashville that make the trek down, including the three of us and our families, and it's a fantastic park. And as you said, the Battery, the setup around it is just awesome.
Yes, absolutely.
And, Paul,
Nashville, man, I love that town as well. So I come up there. My agent is from Nashville, and I think it's a phenomenal place too. So I love that there's Braves fans up there, and it's a good thing going.
Oh, there's a lot. Do you get up here much?
I do. I'm from, as you all know, Louisville, Kentucky. So I always stop in Nashville a lot,
sure.
See my agent or hang out a little bit, have some friends, and it's a great place. And you know, it's not what the show's about, but we used to own a little bit of land in Middle Tennessee, so we'd always stop, in Nashville and go to different places. And I'm astounded at how much Nashville has taken off in the last 10 years. It's crazy. I don't know how y'all do it.
Well, who knows, Paul?
Everybody wants to move to Nashville.
Well, including maybe Major League Baseball down the road. So who knows? You may have stops in Nashville 5-10 years from now. Who knows? Paul, appreciate the visit. Continue to be safe down in Atlanta. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Great show, guys. We'll talk to you soon. See you.
All right. That is Paul Byrd, former big league pitcher, now a Braves analyst for Fox Sports South, and that was a lot of fun with him. We will come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. All right, it's time to release on this Friday. Who or what has made you mad? A $25 gift card to Party Foul on the line for the best. You just made the list, but we're going to have to hustle. We've got Dr. Peter Cobb in the On Deck Circle, 615-737-1025. That's 737-1025. Jump in there. Get involved. The best one will get a $25 gift card to Party Foul. So since we're short on time, let's just get going. Marquise, can you play the clip, please?
No, I'm not splitting no revenue. I want all mine. Bro, y'all got to understand, too, because y'all going to be like, bro, Blake, play for the love of the game, man. What's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing. Bro, I'm risking my life. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It 100% should be a thing. If I'm going to play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. I should not be getting half of what I'm getting paid because the season's cut in half on top of a 33% cut of the half that's already there. So I'm really getting like 25%. On top of that, it's getting taxed. So imagine how much I'm actually making to play. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't making shit. And on top of that, so all that money's gone. And now I play risking my life. And if I get the Rona, on top of that, if I get the Rona, guess what happens with that? Oh, yeah, that's in my body forever. That damage is not going to be like the damage that was done to my body. That's going to be there forever. So now I got to play with that on top of that. So y'all got to understand, man, for me to take a pay cut is not happening because the risk is through the roof. It's a shorter season, less pay. Like, bro, I got to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get mine.
That's Rays pitcher Blake Snell saying he is going to refuse to play for a reduced salary, whether it's half price or whatever. He said, I'm not playing unless I get mine. It's just not worth it. So it's worth it if he gets paid $7 million. He said he's risking his life. There's things. So if he gets $7 million, it's okay because that's what he's, I guess, set to make this year for his 2020 salary. But for $3.5 million, no, he's not going to do it. It's too risky. It's bad luck, man. It's bad optics. Bad. Is it a risk? Yes, we understand that. Is a lot of what he's saying absolutely true? Yeah, of course it is. But as I said yesterday on the program, his presentation just was not good. And oh, by the way, so he's not okay taking less money to be in a risk. So is he out there doing anything out there? Is he getting groceries? Is he buying anything for maybe a little project at home? From a Home Depot, a big department store, Lowe's? Is he checking in at Target or Walmart or any places like that? Is anything getting delivered to his house? Has he got any to-go orders from a restaurant? So is it okay for them, those people? Anybody in the medical profession? Has anybody had to go see a doctor at all in his household or family or friends? So is it okay for all those people to put themselves at risk that he's taken advantage of, but he's not going to do it unless he gets full pay. Blake Snell, man, bad look, bad optics, man. Hearing some of that just infuriates me, and for that,
you just made the list.
So he is on your list because of that.
He is on my list big time.
That's fair. It's the optics, and that's what a lot of people are having to worry about with some of this is some of the optics, because like it's baseball fighting over money, you know, billionaires and millionaires fighting over money. Those optics not very good, and in all of this in these times. So I don't think that's a bad one at all. Willie, you want to go or you want me to go real fast?
I'm ready.
Go ahead.
I was jogging. Beautiful weather last weekend, and I jogged past an establishment. In fact, I jogged around the downtown area. I wanted to just check it out, go on a little longer jog. And I jogged past an establishment. It had something I've never heard of before. Because I think we're now in the mode of, you know, we want to make sure we're staying active, right? We've been at home a lot, but that doesn't mean you don't get some exercise and stay healthy, right? We want to be healthy. That's going to help us combat the virus, right? Eating healthy, exercising, you know. So if you know, God forbid, you are hit with this virus, your body is as best prepared as you can. So I jogged past a place, and it's a bike store. It's a bike rental place, right? A lot of people like to rent bikes. And one of the things they're renting is an electric bike. And I was like, what? An electric bike? I've never heard of that. Like, why would you get a bike that's electric? Like, get a motorcycle or just ride in a car. If you're going to get a bike, exercise, man.
You're saying,
let's go.
You've been in your house for 2+ months. Maybe you should pedal?
Yes. If you're going to get a bike, part of the appeal of a bike is you're getting some exercise. Don't get an electric bike where you just sit on your butt and just cruise around. That's called a motorcycle, or that's called a moped or something. A bike is for exercise. Don't rent an electric bike. So if you're out there and you are trying to get outside and you're getting a quote bike, don't get an electric bike. If you've got an electric bike,
you just made the list.
Yes. No electric bikes. Pedal up the hill. Use your legs. Use your muscles. Get your lungs going a little bit. It's going to help you.
All right, quickly, here's mine. And this is one, this is a theme, but it happened to me the other day. I had to go to the store, and I do a lot of shopping at Target because you can get groceries, you can get everything, one-stop shop. So I do that. And they have a system in place that keeping people 6 feet apart, have my mask on, go to the self-checkout. They're wiping that down after everybody. And so I'm standing in line, and all of a sudden, you know how your spider sense goes off, and I feel hovering. I feel something right on top of me, and I turn around, got that person, no mask, right up next to me, in the bubble. In normal times, like, you're in the bubble. You are it's not even social distancing or physical distancing. This person is in the bubble, and just, you know, I kind of moved up, tried to give the hint. They moved up with me, and finally I had to turn around and I had to say, sir, gonna need you to back up a little bit. Social distancing, tried to make a joke about it. And they say, I'm not living in fear. Neither should you. Sorry. Not your place to say, my friend.
Did they really say that?
Yes.
You've got to be kidding me. That really happened.
Yes. I'm not living in fear, neither should you.
Oh, my.
Free country, if you want to think that, that's fine. But I'm allowed
to.
He's not alone, unfortunately.
Yeah, but
I'm
allowed
to get out of that mindset.
Get
out of that mindset.
Yeah. That's
where was that at again, Chase?
It was at Target.
Wow. Well, first of all, don't they have everything marked?
They do.
My visits to Target, it's all marked.
They do. They've done a fantastic job with it.
Yeah.
I've been, and I feel safe, and just like, You know, and I'm taking the precautions. I mean, am I perfect? Absolutely not. There are times where I have been like, oh, forgot my mask, you know, and I'm trying
to. And it doesn't mean you're living
that.
In fear if you're doing the guidelines that the CDC and every single person has said to do. That doesn't mean you're living in fear because you're doing it. That is so dumb.
Wow. Did you say anything after he said that?
I had this dumbfounded look on my face.
I'm sure you did. I probably would have too.
And I just said, listen, you can feel the way that you want to feel, but this is how I feel. I need space. And I said, and quite frankly, in normal times, you're in my space. So just back up, please.
Wow. Wow. That person definitely goes on the list.
You just made the list.
I'm not perfect, but come on.
Let's get Michael real quick. Michael, who or what's on your list? I guess Michael's not there. Okay. We will come
maybe
back.
Michael had the same guy on his list, and you know, so that he didn't need to be repetitive about it.
All right. Do we need to break, or do we just need to check in with Dr. Peter Cobb? What are we doing, Marquise?
I know Marquise has a lot of moving parts back there.
All right. We said we were going to talk to Dr. Peter Cobb, and we haven't checked in with him in several weeks, so let's do that. Let's just stay here. And he is a family physician, TriStar Medical, down in Murfreesboro on Medical Center Parkway. Dr. Cobb, how you doing on this gorgeous Friday?
I'm doing well, Darren. How are you all doing?
Mid-80s. It's Friday. No complaints.
That's pretty good. I got a golf tee time later on, so.
You shouldn't have any complaints either.
No. I'm being like a doctor, I guess.
So, since the last time we spoke with you on the program, some things have obviously changed. Things have loosened up a little bit, and especially in Rutherford, surrounding counties, Davidson County went into phase one this week. So, since we last spoke, what do you make of where we are as we sit here in mid-May?
Well,
anything changed on your end at all?
I think we're getting a little more information about this virus. What I can tell you is, I just think the psyche of the public is changing. I just get a sense that people are coming to terms with it. We're seeing a lot more patients now in the office. Seems like, you know, we still have that subset of the population that is scared to death of it. They don't want to come in here or go anywhere. And rightly so, you can understand that. And then you also, on the flip side, see people that don't even think it even exists, or they're not fearful at all and don't wear masks. And so I think it runs the gamut. But in general, I think it's either that people are just coming to terms that it's going to be here for a while and they're getting more comfortable, or they're just fed up and leaving their homes. But
I think
we're busier.
Okay. So obviously there's been an uptick in people that you're seeing. So I think you were on hold. You heard kind of Chase's experience this week at Target, and you've had, as you just laid out, both perspectives of different types of patients. While you've been open this entire time, the patient that feels, and I'm sure they're, I don't know what the numbers are, but we certainly know there's a lot of people that feel like, you know, hey, this is overblown or what have you. They're just taking it, they're pretty loose about it. How do you handle that as a doctor when you have a patient that really, let's just say, hasn't bought into any of this?
Well, I try not to get too involved in telling people how they should feel about stuff, because that doesn't typically change their opinion one way or another. I think everyone needs to be respectful of everyone else's stance on it. Certainly wouldn't want to get up in your personal space if that was where you were coming from. Kind of like the quote-unquote opening up of the economy and there are going to be more people that are susceptible, and it's going to be more dangerous for a certain group of people, and so you would understand why they might be more fearful about this. Where others, you know, if you look at the pure numbers, maybe it's not as dangerous. We might be getting some more information that might not be the case long term. But, you know, I think just like anything else in life, Darren, people take different perspectives on things. And you know, as long as you respect somebody else's opinion about it, then, you know, then I think it's okay.
Yeah. With the warmer weather, with people, you know, starting to, you know, I've been kind of painting the picture in Rutherford County. You just kind of backed up what I've said. You've seen an uptick in number of patients. I've seen much more activity, people out and about, frequenting, you know, stores and just traffic in general in Rutherford County. Now that the weather's nice, we've got like 4 days of in the mid-80s, and everybody's, you know, it makes you a little bit friskier because you've been in for so long. And things are also loosening up as everybody in states are opening up. We had the Arizona governor and the Florida governor. Hey, we're open for business, for sports franchises. And does that concern you at all, considering what we've talked about and what you know and what you've seen with this, that, you know, and how much do you think the warmer weather really across the board everywhere will help this, or will that have any effect at all, in your opinion?
Well, this is speculation, but I'm going to do that for you, Darren. But I think that there will be a decline in the number of cases based on the spike that we had recently. I think that'll go down, and there will probably be another spike as the weather gets cooler at the end of the year. I just don't know what that's going to look like. But in general, most viruses do not prefer warm weather, so it would only make sense that we would have a natural decline in it. So that's my speculation, is there'll be a natural decline in it, but it might spike again, especially without having any kind of vaccine against it.
We're talking to Dr. Peter Cobb and getting a little perspective from the medical side of things as we move forward here on this Friday. And Dr. Cobb, one thing, when you first joined us a couple of months ago, and one of the things we talked about that particular day, there were a few baseball programs or some sporting events that were a little slow to come to a halt while the rest of the world was doing so. And one of the things you made a point that stuck with me. You said, you know, the kids are at relatively lower risk, but the thing that could happen is you come home and you can infect others in your family here. I know that now you fast forward to today, there's some teams that would like to start back up and start doing some workouts, if not full-fledged games or anything like that. But what would you say in terms of guidelines to be thinking about if you are going to have a practice with a small group or try to get your team together socially or things like that, just to try to stay in shape and hopefully ratchet back up eventually? What are your thoughts?
Well, kind of, if you've made the decision that you're gonna assume the risk, Willie, of you know, if we do quote unquote open up, and we're gonna assume the risk, the decision's already been made that we're gonna open things up and we're gonna get teams together and we're gonna do that, and you have come to terms with the fact that that may increase the amount, the spread of the virus, and may increase, you know, the number of ICU admissions and things like that. But say you've determined that from a social standpoint you're going to go down that road, well, then you can do some things in teams, in leagues, like we do when we come to work here, which is you do your, you know, we have to call in before we get here and tell the office manager if we have a fever, if we have any symptoms, and if we're well. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have the virus. That doesn't mean we can't transmit it. But you can do some things to mitigate the risk. But I will just illustrate one point for you, Willie, which is I had an unfortunate family, and I love them, but they lost their dad to it and rather quickly, and it would be somebody that you think might pass away from it, and I don't know if I had mentioned that to you in previous talks I've had with you guys, but one of the family members came in, and it had no symptoms, and I did some antibody testing on them, and she was saying to me that she didn't think there was any way that she had it, when in fact I did the antibody testing and it came back positive. So she had absolutely no symptoms, and while it was devastating to a family member. So it's just so difficult to really, once again, I've said this before, but really hard to make public policy when it's such a hard virus to track. It's just difficult. But you can do things to really slow the risk of transmission, and that is doing some screening as well as, masks and then social distancing and washing of hands. So that's what we're trying to do here.
So it sounds like communication, too. If you're a coach or a parent on one of these teams, being able to maybe as part of a routine, go around, make sure everybody is aware if you have any symptoms at all, that should be a no-brainer. Right, and then other things, just being conscientious at a practice of distancing and matters like that. It sounds like communication is going to be important here.
Absolutely, and in something like baseball or golf or whatever, I we don't do this at our where I golf, but I mean you can wear masks if that's what you think may help slow the spread. So there, yes, but I certainly think your due diligence and making sure that anyone who shows up to these kind of things does not have symptoms is at least a starting point.
Dr. Peter Cobb is here with us on Darren Donican Chase, and you kind of answered where I was going with this of masks, because we've all been, a lot of us have been doing that, of what the difference is in a face covering, so to speak, in a medical mask like you would wear, and if they stop the things that we're all looking for them to stop.
Ooh, I wish I could answer that, Chase. I have no idea. We started out through this whole thing not wearing masks. Now we're wearing masks. And I'm just going by what the epidemiologists are telling us, what HCA is telling us to do. And I would be lying to you if I told you in any way how much I think this is stopping or not stopping the spread. I think that still remains to be seen in terms of, studies that come out of this experience. I just don't think we know enough. My guess is that it's more important to keep somebody who has it from transmitting it. It's more important than it is from becoming infected with it. But that's a speculation.
Isn't that the toughest part of this? Is what the story you just told is you could be positive, you could be infected, and truly have no clue that you are.
That's 100% true. And it's concerning and frustrating. I mean, there's just no way to track this unless you have absolute widespread testing, which, of course, is not feasible currently. That's what that is, Darren. It's frustrating.
All right, last thing, and this is a tweet, and I know that it's going to be virtually impossible for you to answer it because you don't live there, but just, take it however you want. Mike Taylor tweets at us and asked if we could ask Dr. Cobb, five states never closed down. Your thoughts on why they didn't have rampant outbreaks? He said, I realize they have smaller populations, but they never stopped, the mingling at bars and restaurants, et cetera. How would you go about answering something about states you don't live in?
The question being, why did five states decide not to?
basically, why didn't they and why didn't we see, you know, a spike or see a lot of things happen there? He said he realizes they're smaller states, smaller population.
Well, I think that's probably the answer, which is it's the risk in this, the risk in this virus is proximity of people. So if you're in wide open spaces, the risk of you contracting it or being contagious go way down. So even in a lot of these Midwest states that didn't close down, I imagine the governors felt like that it wasn't, the risk of the virus was not worth closing down the economy and shelving people for a while. And but of course, in some of those states, they did have large outbreaks in small pockets, and those were in the meat processing plants and other areas where there were people in close quarters. So, you know, once again, there were some European countries that didn't shut down, and so I think it's, you know, those are political decisions. And I think we're still just finding out, weighing the benefits and risks of opening up and how it affects the economy and that the adverse effects that come with that versus the absolute detriment of the virus.
So we'll end with this. So when we first brought you on, the first visit, which was right as was right at the beginning stages of this, to where we are here today in mid-May and everything in between, do you feel like we've learned more? Do you feel like it's going in a better direction? I mean, you're getting more, you're getting better information and you get stuff because of what you do than us. Do you, how would you answer that? Where are we in a better place, so to speak, sitting here than 2.5 months ago or two plus months ago when we started talking to you?
Perhaps slightly, Darren, but also I think it's just going to be patience until we know enough to make good public policy decisions on this. So I think we're getting closer to opening up and feeling comfortable what this thing does and what it can do and who it affects. But I also think that there's going to be stuff that comes out, such as this multi-system inflammatory syndrome in kids that we don't know now and we don't know the long-term effects. And so I think that, that we're still going to have to speculate at this time.
Well, we do know this. The golf courses were closed, and so they're open now. So that's one thing that has changed. So you can go play golf and enjoy this weather. Hit them straight.
I'm going to go lose money as usual there. Yes, thanks.
Thanks for doing this, as always. Good to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
All right, Darren. Thanks. Take care, guys.
That is Dr. Peter Cobb. He is a family physician with TriStar Medical Group. His office is over on Medical Center Parkway down in Murfreesboro. We will come back and start the final hour with Friday Trivia. That's next.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.